Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for April 11th, 2012. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I hope you're doing well. I have got a great show planned for you today. You're really going to want to stick around. The theme today is going to be the mind-body connection. I had already planned to do something different, but some of the recent studies that came out, you're going to want to hear about this. So stick around. We'll do some news and headlines as well. But I'm glad that you're here today on The Healthy Mind. The website is always www.thehealthymind.com, and you're going to want to check out some of the news stories, particularly as it has to do with depression. We'll get into that here shortly. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Dr. Zafiridis. And hey, I want to hear from you, okay? Keep those emails coming. Thank you so much for the ones that you've sent already. You can reach me at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And don't forget, we're out there on iTunes as well. So thank you all for joining me today. You know, I had a plan today in terms of what I wanted to talk about. That was until I reviewed a couple new studies that took a look at the mind-body connection. And I wanted to go that way today because a lot of times what will happen is when people come in to see me, or when they see a psychiatrist or a family doctor for that matter, their primary care physician, if they're prescribed antidepressants, or maybe you've been prescribed antidepressants, the first thing you want to know is, do I really need to be on these? And second, in short order, how long do I have to be on these? Oh my gosh, why do I have to be on these meds? I'm not crazy. This is the stigma that we face every single day. And unfortunately, it prevents some people from getting help. Now, when I'm talking about help, I don't mean just medications. The same thing that we would do to treat other physical illnesses, like hypertension or diabetes or migraines, the things that we do there, part of it may be medication, but a lot of it has to do with exercise, stress management, diet, and the like. So when I talk about the need to properly be aware of your emotions, and if you're not doing well, depression, anxiety, something that's bothering you, make sure you take the time to get it addressed and treated. Because as I'm going to show you here shortly, the goal here isn't just in treatment to get people better emotionally. Of course, that's the main focus. A person comes in, they're feeling depressed or anxious, and we come up with a plan to ease up that depression and anxiety and have people enjoying their lives again. But in addition to that, I really want you to be focusing on the following. When we talk about getting people better emotionally, no matter what the treatment is, it isn't just for the emotions. There could be huge ramifications for you physically, with regards to other illnesses as well. So what am I talking about here? Well, I know that you have all heard doctors and others talk about it. You've probably read about it online. When we're stressed, we can get sick. It can be the common cold. It could be our high blood pressure gets worse or our stomach hurts. But emotions will cause physical symptoms. Stress will cause physical symptoms. So, as I've said on many programs, and I think that this is really the essence when I talk about the healthy mind, is first off to recognize that we have to address the emotional struggles that we have. Yes, to feel better emotionally, but it has implications on our physical well-being as well. So, what do I mean there? Well, let me explain through a couple of studies that just came out over the last week or so. Some beautiful, beautiful studies. And I think you'll understand it a little bit better as we go through it, okay? The first study, and you can read about it, it's on my website. The headline is How Stress Causes Illness. It's all about inflammation. Now, this was a group of researchers at Carnegie Mellon University that looked at the effect of stress on a biochemical level. And what makes this different is they believe that they found a critical link in this mind-body connection. So I want you to really be thinking about that mind-body connection, how our emotions can add or take away from our physical well-being as well. So, you know, we've got stress all the time, and it comes at us from everywhere. We've all been there. Work, the family, the kids, the obligations, mortgage. Oh man. And that stress, we know if it is unchecked, can cause a lot of psychological distress. We can get anxious, we can get nervous, we can get tired, but it also affects us physically because we know that stress, psychological stress, is associated with a greater risk not only for depression, but physical illnesses like heart disease and even infectious diseases. But really, up until now, there really hasn't been a clear and convincing way to be able to understand how stress, an emotion, can cause a physical illness. Now, the folks at Carnegie Mellon University may have found the answer. And what they showed in their study for the first time was that the effects of psychological stress may cause illness because stress affects the ability of the body to regulate inflammation. And inflammation, if you really think about it, is the heart of most diseases that we face. Inflammation has been implicated in high blood pressure and hypertension, in coronary artery disease, all different types of autoimmune disorders like arthritis, and even diabetes is implicated through an inflammatory basis. And what this group of researchers did was to be able to link the psychological stress to increased inflammation. Now, what do you have to know? What does this mean? Stress causes inflammation. How does it do that? The way that this is done is through a hormone known as cortisol. And we've all heard about that. Cortisol is kind of the stress hormone. When we're feeling really tense or worried or depressed, we get a lot of cortisol released into the system. But cortisol affects the inflammatory system. And specifically what is happening there with runaway cortisol, the immune cells become insensitive to cortisol. And runaway inflammation can occur. So when I talk about stress, anxiety, depression, what I do, of course, is to come up with treatments to minimize the emotional suffering. But what we have to understand is with these newer studies that are coming out, we're finding that not taking care of our emotions can not only make us feel sad or worried, but it could have very real implications on our heart, on our hormonal system, on our ability to resist infection. This is what stress is doing. And studies like this one at Carnegie Mellon go to show exactly how this is happening in our body. So when people say, well, why do I have to stay on this medication? Why do I need to be on it? We cannot argue anymore about the fact that these emotional illnesses are medical because they do affect the body far beyond just the emotional centers of the brain. And at least with what this study at Carnegie Mellon was showing is there's a direct effect on inflammation. Now, I want to continue there because we talk about how the emotions can cause physical illness. And there was another study. This one was out of Yale. And it showed the role of inflammation in causing depression. And I've talked about this quite a bit, originally on the radio show, and I've talked about it here on the podcast. But what we have to understand is, like any disease, hypertension or diabetes or arthritis, inflammation is thought to be a main key for how these diseases begin. And according to the most recent Yale study, it does appear that depression begins in some people from an inflammatory origin. Inflammation in the body, increased inflammation in the body, in your body, has the potential to cause depression. So now when I talk about, gosh, the medical part of depression, is it a medical illness or isn't it? We know that now a physiologic process, inflammation, can in some people be the cause of depression. Now, how they studied this at Yale was fascinating. They had participants in the study come in, and they know of certain agents that you can give somebody, known as an endotoxin, that increases the overall inflammation in the body for a short period of time, but you really can raise inflammation in the body. And what they wanted to see was, if you artificially increased inflammation, does that put you at a greater risk for mood problems? And the study results were dramatic. In the vast majority of individuals who were given the endotoxin versus the placebo, the increased inflammation caused a large majority of these participants to feel depressed, to feel lethargic, to have these depressive symptoms. This didn't come because a person didn't pull up their bootstraps or just try hard not to have depression. Not at all. Here, like any of the other medical illnesses, inflammation can be part of their origin. And what other studies have found, and now the most recent study at Yale, is that inflammation can be a cause for depression. So when we talk about this mind-body connection, what you have to understand is the evidence for this is growing every day, not only in terms of what effect do our emotions have on physical illness, stress on physical illness, as we talked about regarding the Carnegie Mellon study. But what role do physical illnesses, or in this case, an inflammatory state, inflammation, play in the origin of depression? These are amazing, amazing times, and we're learning so much more about science of the brain. It is growing and is one of the most exciting areas in all of medicine. But stigma still persists. And unfortunately, no matter what data you look at, a large amount of individuals, over 50%, who have anxiety and depression never get the treatment at all. Never. 2012, and most still do not. My friends, beyond feeling better emotionally, what is the risk to keeping that stress and that emotion at that level of distress for the rest of your body? So if you can begin to understand that, I'm not trying to brainwash anyone. I'm not trying to make you or force you believe that this is real, the medical parts of anxiety and depression. Don't believe me, but take a look at the studies that are out there. You can find them on my website, but you could just do a Google search, because we don't have time. We don't have time with stigma anymore. It is a matter in some individuals of life or death. So let's work as hard as we can to understand these emotional illnesses for what they are and what they're not. Because in doing so, we can take one beautiful and decided step forward down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, it has been really a phenomenal week of news, and it really has been along this mind-body theme. It's really amazing. And I wanted to go there first, just kind of continuing this idea and the theme of this week's podcast. The headline, stress illness. Childhood trauma is linked to IBS symptoms or irritable bowel syndrome symptoms in adults. And what they found was that emotional abuse was the biggest predictor for adults with irritable bowel syndrome, IBS. So the mind-body connection is growing across all aspects of physical illness as well. And here, this particular study that was done at UCLA at the David Geffen School of Medicine found that patients with IBS have a greater prevalence in early adverse life events, including overall trauma as a child, as well as physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. Now, according to the lead author, Dr. Chang, he stated, quote, various types of adverse events are associated with the development of irritable bowel syndrome, particularly in women. Now, there has been, for a long period of time, a relationship between a history of abuse and IBS. But in this particular study at UCLA, what the scientists wanted to do was look at the range of traumatic events, not just abuse and IBS, just to see, is there a relationship? And what they found was, compared with those individuals that do not have IBS, those with IBS reported a higher level of general trauma, physical punishment, emotional abuse, and unfortunately, sexual abuse as children. There was a wide range of types of abuse that they looked at. But of all of them, emotional abuse was the strongest predictor of IBS. Now, a study like this is very near and dear to my heart because my area of interest within psychiatry is, what is the role of emotions in creating physical illness? Particularly if these are emotions like rage, like anger, like fury, or deep, more existential anxiety. What is the role of those emotions as we work them out in creating physical pain, real pain? This is not psychosomatic that one is imagining it. It is real. The whole pain cascade is activated. But it's studies like this that continue to add to our understanding. Past life events, at least in this case, traumatic events, were linked to physical discomfort as well. So again, we go along this theme like earlier in the broadcast, the mind-body connection. How do you not get treated for emotional struggles or emotional illness when you can see not only the implication on how you feel psychologically, but also physically? So fascinating, fascinating work that's being done at UCLA. Okay, the next story, and I love this. It was really great. We are a Facebook nation, and this study looked at the effect of being excluded online. And the headline, Facebook angst. Being excluded by others online really hurts. Now, we've all been there. We felt excluded in real life. Maybe we didn't get invited to a party, or someone didn't think to ask us to go with them somewhere. We've been there. We know how much it hurts. Well, researchers at Penn State University found that people who are excluded by others online, like in Facebook, may feel just as bad as if they had been excluded in person. And it's more common than you think. According to the study author, Dr. Joshua Smith, he states, quote, if you've ever felt bad about being ignored on Facebook, well, you're not alone. Even though Facebook, with nearly a billion users, can you believe this? A billion users, can be a great place to make the social connections, exclusion can occur, and it cuts deep. Now, even the researchers themselves had stated that they were surprised by the results. Going back to Dr. Smith, quote, most people would probably expect that being ignored or rejected by a remote source like the internet wouldn't hurt as much as being rejected in person. Yet, the study showed that people experience similar reactions to online exclusion as they do with face-to-face exclusion. Now, think about that. Friends of yours, or if you've ever been in that position, you know it. You know that. You've been there when someone has excluded you. We all have been. And it turns out, according to the team at Penn State University, it's real, and it can cut as much as in person. Now,
with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines.
Okay, the first headline. And I'm going to stay with the mind-body connection, at least for the first headline. Early life emotional trauma may stunt intellectual development. Early life emotional trauma may stunt intellectual development, indicates the first long-term study of its kind, published online in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. The next headline. Nearly half of preschool children are not taken outside to play by parents on a daily basis. A new study led by Dr. Pooja Tandon of Seattle Children's Research Institute found that nearly half of preschoolers in a sample representing about 4 million children did not have even one parent-supervised outdoor play opportunity every day. And finally, oh, I love this. A study confirms that long commercials evoke stronger emotions. Fantastic. This is all we need. Longer commercials. A recent university study was able to measure the emotional responses of people to a series of advertisements, and they found that longer commercials evoke stronger emotions. Oh, like they're not long enough already, right, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, gosh. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. As always, the website, www.thehealthymind.com. Don't forget we're on iTunes as well for the podcast. You can rate us there. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, criticisms, anything, contact me. You can email me at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you back here next time, right here on the Healthy Mind.